Good afternoon. I'd like to thank everyone for this opportunity to be here. I got a text message from Rob about 2 weeks ago, and text messages are funny because when I get them, I always think to myself, the first thing that goes to my mind is, was this for me? So I get this text from Rob, and it's like, hey, can you preach in a couple weeks? And I think, let's see, let's wait, let's give it some time, let's see if this was really meant for me. So I give it a little bit of time, and no response, nothing from Rob. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I can't dodge this. So I say, sure, yeah, that's fine. And then I think to myself, well, what if he sent this to a bunch of people and I was just the first person to respond? You know, maybe I should have waited longer. But no, it's good. I'm thankful to be here. I think this is great. Really neat thing going on this summer. The text he sent me was James 1, 22 through 27. And basically, we'll go ahead and if we can bring that up, we'll try to read that. Basically, the context for tonight is to do the next thing right, and that's kind of what we're kind of going through. I know with the True North and everything, that's kind of where we're going. So we'll go ahead and read this. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like a man who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard, but doing it, he will be blessed in what he does. If anyone considers himself religious and yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself and his religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. So after reading this, I've got 3 points. I'm a big 3-point person. I've gone to churches in Mississippi, and Erica's old preacher, you never knew how many points there were going to be. You're expecting 3, there might be 8, there might be 10, you just never knew. So I'm a big proponent of 3, and I let everyone know. The first thing I'm going to talk about is who are you? Where are we? If we're going to be talking about the steps we're going to take, I think it's very important to determine at the very beginning where we are, to determine where we need to go. The second point is, where do you want to go? I think that's another thing. If you're over here and you're trying to get over here, the next step logically needs to be on a straight line somewhere. And that's another thing we're going to talk about. And then, obviously, at the end, what's your next step to get there? So we'll start at the beginning. Who are you? I thought it made me think of the Three Stooges, where who's on first, what's on second? And I thought, well, we can do that, but that's just confusing. I'd rather not do it. But who are you? It's a simple question, but sometimes it's a little deeper than that. I took a class at State Farm. They had a guy come in, and he teaches this class about the 7 habits of highly effective people. And it's an interesting class because it's a 3-day class, and the whole first day is devoted to this question of who are you? And I had never really thought about it, and there's a bunch of people in this classroom, and we're all sitting around, and a little squirrely little guy, and he goes, write down in 2 minutes, who are you? So everyone just writing frantically, and you write a lot until you realize you've got an entire 2 minutes, and there's really not that much to write. So after about a minute and a half, he looks around, and he calls out one guy and says, okay, well, who are you? And he starts talking about these things, and the guy lets him finish, and he says, thank you for participating. But there were things like he works at State Farm and like his where he got his degree and all these little things. And the guy goes, those are important. Those make up who you are. But they're not necessarily who you are. It's deeper than that. It's what do you base your decisions on your life on? What do you always go back to? Who are you? Who do your friends and neighbors and relatives, who do they look at you and say, he's a person of this or she's a person of this? The guy who wrote the book was named Stephen Covey. And when he was going back and looking, he went back. He said over 200 years, and he decided to study the idea of success in America. And what did these people that they considered themselves successful in America, what did they all have in common? He was looking for something that they all had that he could then obviously write a book about and make a lot of money about. But he would look through magazines and biographies and all these things, and he noticed in the first 150 years, the focus for these people were things like character and principles, things that never changed, things that they decided were important, and then everything in their life revolved around those decisions they made early in life. Things like integrity, courage, compassion, contribution, responsibility, justice, things like that that are solid, that you have a base, that you have a foundation for all your other decisions in life. You can go back to that foundation. He then noticed, roughly 1920s to 1930s, there seemed to be a shift. And there was a shift away from these character and principle ideas. And society was more interested in things like personality and what you talked about, talking the talk, not necessarily walking the walk, but talking the talk, things that you would say, but you weren't necessarily living by. And the society was more interested in how you looked, how you dressed, more so than what you did, how you acted, the decisions you made in life. It was more on tactic or technical and not principle. Things that weren't necessarily heartfelt, that don't necessarily build relationships, but they make you look good. It's all about you. What are you trying to accomplish? He then told a story about how there was an old man, and he was a wise old man, and this woman brought their child up to the wise old man and said, "You know, I'd like you to tell my child to quit eating sugary food." And the wise old man looked at her and said, "Okay, well, tell you what, come back to me in a week and we'll revisit this." So she said, "Okay." So she went away. She came back in a week, and the wise old man talked to the child and, you know, don't eat sugar, things like that, and the child listened. But the mom looked at him and goes, "Why couldn't you have made that decision or talked to my child a week ago?" And the old man said, "Because a week ago I was eating sugar." And it obviously doesn't make a lot of sense to you be doing something but to tell someone else not to do it. So that goes back to the character principle and things like that. It's important for us to know who we are. That way we have that base and where to go. What we are communicates far more eloquently than anything we say or do. Because people can see who you are. People see it daily. That's day in and day out. If you don't even talk to that person, but you see them and how they act in the community, you will know more about that person than maybe that five-minute conversation you had with them later that day. Let's look at some biblical examples. Let's go to Jonah 1 through 17. I think we've got that. I think we're all familiar with the story of Jonah. So let's go ahead and we'll read this. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, "Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me." But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee the Lord. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God. And they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below the deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, "How can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us and will not perish." Then the sailors said to each other, "Come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity." They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, "Tell us, who is responsible for making all this trouble for us? What do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you?" He answered, "I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land." This terrified them, and they asked, "What have you done?" They knew he was running away from the Lord, because he had already told them so. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, "What should we do to you to make the sea calm down for us? Pick me up and throw me into the sea," he replied, "and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you." Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried to the Lord, "O Lord, please do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, O Lord, have done as you pleased." Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. But the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. Who was Jonah? I think it's interesting they ask him that. They "Who are you? There's something, you're asleep in a storm, there's something going on. Who are you?" And I think it's interesting his reply. Let me see if I can find it. I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land. That's a pretty good answer. I mean, if someone's going to come up to you and say, who are you? What is it that you do? For you to say, I am Christian, I believe in Jesus, to have an answer that is that direct, not really messing around, but it's a coverall. It's an answer that gets everything. Jonah had a mission. He had a mission. He wasn't necessarily going on it. God was trying to use Jonah, but he decided he didn't want to be used at that time. He decided he was going to be somebody else. But it's interesting, at the time of the storm, to the time when everyone's around him asking him who he is, he comes to his senses and he says, this is who I am. It's interesting that God brings him back. You know, he's on this path. He's going from who he is today. He tries to get away from that. But then God finds a way to then bring him back to where God needed him and where God wanted him to be and what God could use him for. Let's go to Luke 15, 11 through 24. And this is the prodigal son. Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. So you have the prodigal son who, he decides that at this stage in his life that he is now an adult and he is going to go out and he's going to take what he will inherit one day, but he's going to take it now. And that's who he wants to be. So he takes this and he goes out on this path. And he realizes, once everything's been paid out and his friends are gone, and he's I'd say it's about as low as you can probably be, he remembers to figure out who he is. And he remembers, wait a second, you know, I have a family. My family has servants. I have a good situation. That situation is still there. And he goes back to, okay, well, his character didn't get him to where he was. It was actually probably the lack of character. But to take where he was and then decide, you know what, I can go back, that's a pretty big step. To go back, and I would say there'd probably be embarrassment there. There'd probably be a pretty tough situation to go back to that. But to decide, you know what, this is what I'm going to do, and to make the right decision to go back, I think that shows at that point he had made the decision of, this is who I want to be. He was who he was. He decided to change that, but then he can always go back to who he wants to be. I think part of that also is he decided to know where he was going. He decided to look out and say, okay, this is where I am. It's not a good place. I don't want to be here anymore. I need to make a conscious effort to change and then go to where I want to go. So on the next step of our three phases here is, where are we going? Have you ever been lost? I know that's a fun question. It's 2014. We were in Alabama. We were going down to Auburn, Alabama. We had stopped. We were trying to stop at a salvage facility to buy a car part for my dad. So none of us are familiar with this city. So we're driving down, and I think it had two stoplights, and it's not on GPS. It's not on our phones. It's 2014. We don't own a map. What do you do? So we pull into a gas station. The gas station attendant, I love gas station attendants because they've grown up there their whole lives, but they don't know how to get you like anywhere in the town. Like, all the directions are based on like locations. Like, go to the Dairy Queen and take a left, and you're like, well, how can one town have four Dairy Queens? But somehow they do. So she gives these directions, and We end up getting more lost. So we finally call the salvage facility, and this guy is really grumpy. And he answers, and he, you know, how can I help you? And I, well, we're lost. Okay, well, how can I help you? Well, where are you? We're on some road in Alabama. I mean, we had no idea. So he kind of tones down the grumpiness for a minute, decides he's going to help us. And I go, well, do you show up on GPS? And he kind of laughs and he goes, we don't show. We've been here 75 years and we don't show up on GPS. So needless to say, it wasn't fun. But we finally got there, and getting there was kind of an adventure as well, because it wasn't quite the facility I thought it would be. But that was fun. But imagine going through your whole life that way. It's a helpless feeling. It's your loss. You don't know where you're going. You might not know where you are. It's scary. You don't have a goal. You have hope that maybe this guy on the other end of the phone will give you good directions. But I mean, there's really no guarantee that that's going to happen. You're just wandering around aimlessly. It's not a good way to probably go through life, but I would imagine there's quite a few people that do it, and I think that in itself is scary. But let's look at the scripture. David is someone who knew where he was going. He was considered a man after God's own heart. David longed more than anything to spend time alone with the Lord. If you read through the Psalms, I've got a couple examples here. It's incredible how much he loved God and how he wrote about God. And he wrote about heaven, and just for him to have written about it as often as he did, it just must have been on his mind constantly, just all the time. That love and that devotion and that just thought of that's all he ever wanted in life was that goal. That if nothing else works out, that's the one goal that he wanted to happen. If you look at Psalms 1:1-2, how blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and his law he meditates day and night. David sought to honor and glorify the Lord with all his life. Psalms 2:11, worship the Lord with reverence and rejoice with trembling. All he wanted to do was obey the Lord with his heart, mind, soul, and strength. If you go down to Psalms 27:4, one thing I have asked the Lord that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to meditate in his temple. It's just a good example of if we've got this life we're living and we are where we are today and here we are, but that goal, that on the horizon, that beacon of this is where we want to go. This is what everything leads to. This is what God is trying to get us to. This is what we're trying to get it to. This is what this church is trying to get us to. The fastest point between two objects is obviously a straight line. And if you look back on, you know, some of these examples of the paths they took in life and the paths I know I take in life, it isn't necessarily a straight line. It isn't from where I am today to heaven. It's veering to the right or to the left. It's nothing to the extreme of being swallowed by a whale. But obviously, if you look through the Bible, all these examples of David, Moses, prodigal son, their path to heaven isn't necessarily a straight line. If anything, some of them are more like a bell curve. It's way up here of you know, I'm in a fish or I'm in a boat and falling asleep. Or you've got Moses who, you know, doesn't get to see the Holy Land. I mean, it's just all these examples through the Bible of situations where the faith was there, their life was there, they reached the goal, but it's not easy. One example, obviously, of the straight line would be Jesus, but I was reading in another one, Enoch. Godliness is walking with God, which shows reconciliation to God. Two cannot walk together unless they agree to walk together. To walk with God includes all the parts of a godly, righteous, and sober life. To walk with God is to set God always before us, to act and behave as if he is right there at all times. It is constantly to care in all things to please God, and is nothing to offend him. It is to be followers of him as dear children. The Bible doesn't say Enoch lived, but rather it says Enoch walked with God. This was his constant care and work. While others lived to themselves in the world, he lived to be with God. It was the joy of his life. Enoch was removed to a better world. Enoch did not live like the rest of mankind, so he did not leave leave the world like the rest of mankind. Enoch was brought up to heaven. God came down and brought him up. And I think it's incredible that you read about him and just walking with God. I know Lorelai to me is hilarious because we'll be walking and everything is, what is it? What is it? What is it? And you answer these questions and it's things that you know the answer to, but she's young and she doesn't. And I can only imagine that walking with God would be something way even more than that. I mean, he would know so much more than we would know. And just to ask, well, why this? Or tell me your thoughts on, I mean, just to walk with God for that amount of time, I think would be a really good, that's obviously a great goal. That walking with God, heavenly home, that's where we want to be. So what's the next step? It really just depends on who you are and where you are. I think it's different for everyone because we're all in different places of our journey. We might all be working on different things. We might all be working on different aspects of our life. We might all have different talents. God might want to use us in different ways. We might be on different paths. God might be asking some of us to go one way and others another, and that is all for his glory and to bring others to Christ. So the next step really depends on your walk with God and where you are in that walk. I was at a doctor's office probably 2 months ago, and a gentleman came in, and he had a heavy accent, and it was down off the square. It's Hopkins down off the square. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that. But he comes in, and I'm sitting there like reading a magazine, trying not to touch anything because that's where sick people go. So he comes in and he's got a piece of paper in his hand and he's got a wad of money in his other hand. And he is very confident. He is very courageous. And he goes up to the attendant and he slaps the piece of paper on the ground on her desk and then slaps the money on the desk and says, "I need to pay my ticket." And she kind of looks at him because he's very confident in this demand to pay this ticket. Well, it turns out it's a traffic ticket, and he is completely lost because he is trying to pay this traffic ticket at a doctor's office. So, needless to say, that the attendant, she wasn't the most helpful because she had other things she needed to be doing. But all the courageousness and all the confidence in that man at that time left his body. He was lost. He didn't know where to go. He didn't know what his next step should be. He was very confident he was in the right place. He was going to pay this ticket. He was going to be relieved of this problem. It didn't work out that way. So he's standing there, and he's kind of looking around with this ticket and money in his hand, and I'm looking at my magazine like, okay. So finally, me and another guy get up, and we kind of take him outside, and we kind of point, like, that's where you need to go. That's your goal. That's where, if you want to take care of this problem, that's where you want to go. He was lost. He knew what he wanted to do. He was doing it, I guess, to the best of his knowledge, but he just needed guidance. There's no shortage of people looking for guidance. Whether it be in their lives, in their families' lives, in their work, in their spiritual life, I don't think a week goes by that you don't hear someone saying, "What's the purpose of life? You know, why are we here?" And some people are looking. Some people have given up and aren't looking anymore. Maybe they're looking for happiness. Maybe they're looking for love. But maybe they just don't even know where to start. They don't know where to take that next step. I hope tonight and maybe over this week that we can reflect not only on who we are and what we're trying to accomplish, what paths we're taking to walk with God and have a heavenly home one day, but to also consider the paths that God is of other people that God is bringing into our path, the paths of others that maybe we're not. I know I'm terrible about it. You meet someone and you're like, "Why did I meet that person?" And then you think 2 weeks later, "Well, maybe I should have said something about Jesus. I gave him directions to Chick-fil-A, but I couldn't tell him about Jesus." You know, I love Chick-fil-A too, but in the grand scheme of things, I could have given him directions to Popeyes and he would have been fine too. And that's just reading over this, that's the kind of things that I was thinking in my mind of my spiritual walk and the steps I should be taking. But as we go out and as God brings others into our path, let's also consider possibly what we can do to possibly bring them along with us. Because I think that's part of the goal as well. It's not only to walk with God and have a heavenly home, but to bring as many people as we can with us on that journey. We have elders. The church is here. If you have any questions or concerns, or if there's anything the church can do to help you, please feel free to come forward. Together we stand and sing.